guest of this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Reporter. Very special guest, Zachary King. You know, you talk about going right to the source, the first person eyewitness involved in such things as, well, Satanism. But now, of course, he's dedicated his life to Jesus Christ, and he's but he's here to tell us about his what it was really like. And you know, some Christians need to really understand that this stuff is real. And it's interesting from the mail that we get saying that, wait a minute, you shouldn't be talking about this. And you know, it amazes me that there are, and I don't want to sound disparaging or seem insulting, but there are Christians who have denounced us and said, you know, you were horrible people for even broaching subjects like this. And how dare you pollute the minds of Christians. Well, you know, I'm just going to stop there, but understand, this is the kind of email that we do get, having said that to you. Now, before we get to our guest, two announcements. Number one, understand we've got multiple feeds across the studio that we're watching from New York, from Washington. If anything does happen, folks, we'll let you know. But it's kind of like watching Meet the Press in certain cases. Yeah, there are some little things going on here and there. But otherwise, if you like to watch, you know, Paint Dry or Meet the Press, whatever, that's kind of the way it is at the moment. That's not to say there aren't little dust-ups here and there. But if there's anything, we'll break in with our guest for the indulgence of that. And again, before we get back to Mr. King, who's just providing some fantastic, riveting information, I want to mention that T.C. Joseph, This Generation series of novels, is just selling great guns. My goodness. As well it should. Folks, T.C. Joseph is a talented, gifted writer. He's also a nice guy. But he's written a series of novels. Book one is Precipice, book two is Pentecost, and book three is Penance. If you've watched Josh Tolley's videos, you'll see his books on his bookshelf behind Josh Tolley. I like to look at that when I look at people, watch their videos, see what's on their bookshelf. But This Generation series of novels, it's a thrilling series. T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families in a world where conspiracy theories and Bible prophecies collide. He takes us through recent history to the events that are just happening now. He's got a witty style and fascinating character development. It provides just a great read, and it can, you know, his novels can be used as tools as well to those who don't want to read real stuff. They prefer fiction. Well, readers of end time fiction will be hard pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. That's according to Kirkus Reviews, Blue Ink Reviews, both great, astounding, glowing reviews. Get your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series on Amazon.com today. Again, book one, Precipice, book two, Pentecost, and now three is Penance. Get them all. That's T.C. Joseph, ThisGenerationSeries.com. That's ThisGenerationSeries.com or on Amazon. ThisGenerationSeries.com or on Amazon.
Our guest is Zachary King. Before the break, we were talking, we were just getting into the part of your story that deals with the abortions. And if we can pick up right there where we left off, you talked about one of your first rituals that involved an abortion was right before you turned 15. And you talked about the having the lawyers and it being legal to perform it if the baby's in the womb, and murder if the baby was not in the womb. And was this something that was a regular practice for your satanic coven?
It was fairly regular for my coven, but this was my very first one. I kind of heard that these things happened. They were associated with a spell that's called a hex. This was like if you absolutely, positively wanted the spell to take place, then you needed to have this hex done. But I didn't know what was involved. And I found out that an abortion is what's involved. The girl is giving up her baby willingly. She knows why she's getting pregnant, and she's totally on board with having the abortion. I was the only, I was the only male that was as young as I was in the room. For the most part, it was all adults. That there were some, there were like 50 women nude, kneeling on the floor, swaying back and forth, chanting our bodies ourselves. And some of those women were under 18. Most of them were of legal age, all the way up to probably about 60. And then we had, 13 high priests and priestesses that were surrounding, the woman that was giving up her baby, and they were going to read off the spell. There were people there that were chanting or saying, muttering spells under their breath or chanting something, which almost sounded like a song. And then, there was an abortion doctor, an abortion nurse. This took place in a farmhouse that was more sterile than most abortion clinics that I've been in, afterwards. And, you know, we did everything started just prior to midnight. Midnight is considered the witching hour. 3 a.m. is considered the devil's hour. The ritual was probably completely finished at 3:15. And, you know, after that, I don't know how graphic you want the story to get. I mean, I could just tell you that a baby was aborted. You know, that's the clean version of the story.
Well, I think, I mean, you don't have to get too graphic, but give us the facts. I mean, as best you can, the understanding that we adhere to FCC guidelines. So, I mean, was there cannibalism involved?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there was, my job as the magic practitioner, the main magic practitioner at the event, I have to get blood on my hands. And it can be the woman's blood or the baby's blood. I had been practicing with like a ball of Play-Doh or an apple or an orange and a scalpel, but I really didn't know what I was doing. And when it came time for me to insert my hands and do something, I had no idea what I was doing. I was so nervous. My legs were like spaghetti. I had like no blood left in my system. It was all adrenaline. And I was really scared. And I was like almost looking at everything third person. I pulled my hands out and they were bloody, but I don't think they were from the baby. And then the doctor, inserted a tube and then some other stuff. I wasn't even really, I was just, my head was swimming. I was kind of watching what he was doing, but you know, being 14 years old and him being an older man and a doctor knowing exactly what he's doing, it was all really kind of fascinating to me. And then he inserted what looked like scissors, but with a curved portion. It was a little like tongs with teeth. And he reached in and tore the baby out, bit by bit, and threw it to the women that were on the floor. And they cannibalized everything but the bones. And then afterwards, there was just a big sex orgy there. And then, you know, that ended. And when that was over, I was able to sneak back home. And I got home just about in time for my parents to wake up me and my brother so we could go to church on time.
It's a pretty horrific story.
Yeah, it is. All right. So, how many of these, was that the only time, or did you, I mean, was this, tell me again, multiple times?
That was my first one as probably... Between then and turning 18, I think I did a total of about 5. And then when I was 18, I joined another coven. When I was 21, I became, the position I achieved was what's called a high wizard. And as a high wizard, I did an additional 141 of them. So I did 146 total.
Yeah. And folks, on All Saints Ministry website, Abortion as a Satanic Sacrifice CD is now available.
And if we, yeah, let's expand on that, because we were talking about this just the other day. Obviously, the abortions done in ritualistic fashion and inside satanic groups are sacrifices to Satan, but I would argue that every abortion is a ritual and set up to be a sacrifice to Satan. Is that, what's your opinion on that?
In my opinion, yes. I mean, we have a CD set out called Abortion is a Satanic Sacrifice. You know, part one, we talk about how we got abortion in America. Part two is what organizations, I worked with personally to move Satan's agenda forward for abortion. And part three, we tell you through spiritual warfare how to shut down an abortion clinic. And we give you examples of where the spiritual warfare has worked. You know, we give you like one example, you know, we give you four things that will shut one down, and then an example to go with each one, and then of where it has worked, and then we tell you about an organization that does all four things, and they've shut down 27 abortion clinics. And if abortion wasn't spiritual warfare, then fighting against it with spiritual warfare wouldn't do anything. You know, the reason we haven't stopped spiritual warfare is because we're fighting in a spiritual battle, but we're doing it physically. You know, like every year we write more laws, every year we send, you know, like the March for Life is coming up this year, like January 27th. You know, we're probably going to send another 600,000 people to march. You know, and the satanic side sends like 25 people at a time. So there's no reason for them to really send anybody. Abortion's legal. You know, the really crazy thing is that I asked my brother, I was like, do you know how long Planned Parenthood's been open? You know, and he figured, well, the abortions were legal in this country in 1973, so he guessed they'd been open around since 1973. And I said, well, last year they celebrated being open for 100 years. You know, they saw the writing on the wall way before we saw it. And we did not have abortion in this country for almost 200 years. And now once it's gone, you just can't seem to stop it. And it's because we don't fight the right way. We're fighting a spiritual battle physically. So, I mean, I absolutely believe in at night, every night between midnight and three, a black mass takes about 45 minutes. A shorter black mass takes about 20 minutes, but an extended black mass is 3 hours. They start at midnight, they end at three. Again, you know, the witching hour and the devil's hour. And they dedicate all, now this is in every time zone around the world, they dedicate all the aborted babies of that day to the devil. It doesn't matter if you went there because you can't afford the baby or because you're a partier and this, you know, eats into your partying lifestyle, or if you did it because you know it's a sacrifice to the devil. The devil takes it serious no matter why you kill the baby.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And you talked about the Planned Parenthood being open for about 100 years or 100 years. As you said, they celebrated their anniversary. It's interesting, even today, even everybody should know what, you know, what is an abortion, what Planned Parenthood does. It's even the media, going back to the media, protecting institutions and people that they absolutely have no business protecting and should be exposing, protects Planned Parenthood, repackaging it as women's reproductive health rights, and then try to minimize the amount of abortions that are done there by saying, you know, most of the business is checking for cancer and doing, you know, other types of screening. But in reality, I believe Planned Parenthood and its power comes from, you know, being the provider of abortions.
Well, if I can ask, were you ever on premise at a Planned Parenthood facility,
for the purposes of the ritual?
Yes.
You're going to find this answer amusing. My attorney has instructed me to say no.
Okay, your attorney has instructed you to say. I'm sorry, you cut out there.
My attorney has instructed me to say no. I will say that I have done 20 abortions at abortion clinics, and that it was a major abortion provider. Legally, that's what I'm allowed to say.
And
the other 26 were done either in private homes or in doctor's offices.
When you were not at the private homes or doctor's offices, well, I guess even when you were, either place or all places, were there medical doctors at each abortion?
Yes. Yes, there was always like an actual abortion doctor there. Nurses, full equipment, full medical equipment. You know, if anything went wrong, there would be somebody there to take care of you. It wasn't just, you know, a handful of wacko occultists, you know, doing an abortion. And if something goes wrong, oops, we'll just bury the bodies and everything will be okay. You know, it wasn't done like that. There was even, if you were trying to do an abortion and it went wrong and the baby lived, there would be an adoption attorney there and a nurse that would take care of the baby and get it adopted out.
And the way you describe that's interesting, because you talk about child pornography aspect of the coven, which is completely illegal. You know, there's no protecting yourself from that in a court of law or, you know, from any honest law enforcement person. But the sticking to legal, sticking to the laws of the country for the purposes of conducting you know, abortions or whatever. How is that reconciled, where certain things outside of the law were okay to do, but, you know, you have to be keep everything in the legal parameters when doing these things? Was that ever talked about or brought up?
No, it was just, I think they were looking at if you're going to do something illegal like murder, because, you know, I would imagine back, you know, when I was doing the child pornography stuff, I was a child. You know, they were looking at it like, well, you know, if you're caught, you're not going to be executed. But if you're caught murdering somebody, you are going to be executed. So, you know, figuring that usually if you're going to be charged, you're going to be charged with the worst crimes possible. Whoa. So, you know, I think they looked at a lot of things like, well, you know, murder is a serious charge, but pedophilia wouldn't be that bad.
Hence the change in law recently, shall I say, where the law decriminalized the participant in a pedophilia video that would be underage. There's no question there. I mean, that's not a question. That's building off what you said. Now, I asked you the question about the Planned Parenthood facility, which you replied your attorney instructed you to say no. Fine. But, however, you did amend that statement by stating that you were at abortion facilities, plural.
Right.
Okay. Now, may I ask, was it more than one city, and can you identify the cities?
I have been, for all 146, I have been... The majority of them were in the United States. I've done two or three in Germany, and that was all around the same place. I just don't remember where I was. I mean, I was 22 years old and I'm 50 now. In the United States, I've done them, almost in all states. I know I've done some in Kansas, I've done some in Louisiana, Texas, New York, California, and Florida, and then pretty much every point in between, but those were the states that I did stuff in the most.
Can you tell us who paid your travel expenses? I mean,
the majority of the stuff that happens, when you're a high wizard, you work for the coven. And the coven... I joined this coven in 1987. I was the high wizard around, let me see, I joined it in like 84 or 85. In 87, I was made the high wizard. And I know back in 1989, they did a census to find out how many members they had around the world. And in 1989, they had 1.1 million members worldwide. So, you know, it's not just all poor people. It's not just a bunch of completely faced kids out in a cemetery, you know, playing with a Ouija board, you know, that belong to a satanic coven. Right. So, know, Satan's rich. You know, yeah. God is wealthy. Satan's rich.
Isn't that interesting? Wow.
So all the stuff that I did, I mean, I flew on a lot of private airplanes. There was a while I got to fly from country to country, and I didn't even have a passport.
I'd like to expand on that. I mean, okay, right there. Then obviously we're talking about, I don't know how much you can say on this, but are we talking about flying with politicians, people in power, that kind of personnel or that kind of,
I did spells for kings and queens, diplomats, presidents, rock stars, actors. If anybody had money, now I didn't get paid this money. My coven got paid the money, but you know, I'd still be given favors or be given gifts. And you know, I have flown, I don't remember the name of the country. It's tiny and it's like in the middle of nowhere and they have a king that's over it. And I got to go there multiple times just because they wanted somebody that could practice magic that didn't already live there. They could possibly get some stuff done that they wanted to get done. And, you know, it's supposed to be like a lot of the countries I go to are supposed to be poor. And yet they could afford to give my coven like a few hundred thousand or even a few million dollars to do things. So, you know, even countries that claim to be poor gotta have money somewhere.
You know, it speaks to how widespread this is in our nation and in our world, and the network is.
Can I ask, have you met Tony or John Podesta in person, Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton or Jeffrey Epstein? Are you allowed to answer those questions?
I met Bill Clinton in 1992 at Bohemian Grove. I was having lunch with him at Bohemian Grove when Hillary came up. And I did not know who Hillary Clinton was. I was having lunch with Bill. I was like, he was like the only person that was out there. It was like the end of the day for eating. And I kept passing this table with all this nice food on it. And I'm working. So the High Wizard look comes, it's a certain way. It's like a old school tuxedo, a top hat, a wand, a cane, and face paint. Corpse paint on the face. If you go to YouTube and look up Pink, Like a Pill, she has a High Wizard in her video four times. So that would have been my look. And I kept passing this table of food thinking I really want a piece of that cake. But by the time I passed it the last time, the cake was gone. And I looked over and there's this guy and he's got a giant piece of this cake and he's eating, he's got like a pretty good barbecue plate on his table. And I walk over and I ask him if I can have a piece of the cake. And he's like, oh, sure, here, I'll split it in half, and you can have whichever half you want. Very nice man. And I didn't really watch TV. I didn't even care who the president was or what was going on. And the first time I was at the Grove was 1987, and it was kind of disappointing. I saw Ronald Reagan there. And I was kind of like, oh, I voted for you. You know, why are you here? And so here it is, you know, I'm seeing Bill Clinton, and I kind of know who that is, but not really. And while we're sitting there, all of a sudden, one of my security people presses me down to the table, is basically laying on top of me, and telling me there's a woman there. And they start pulling out guns on this woman, and I have no idea what's happening, because now I'm surrounded by security, and they make her drop down to her knees, they've got a gun on her, and they're telling her to, you know, stop, to drop, whatever they're saying. And then they let me up, they check her, she's not armed, and they ask me what I want them to do. And Bill says that's his wife. And I said, well, do you love your wife? Or can we shoot her? What's the thing here? And he says, oh no, I love my wife. Don't shoot my wife, I love my wife. Okay. So we had security escort her off the property. I didn't really know, you know, it wasn't until probably months later that I was like, oh, wow, I was talking to president Bill Clinton and his wife.
I got to ask. Okay. I would have thought he would have said shooter. I mean, that's just my, you know, my warped sense of humor. Okay. Given the, but that aside, why the guns drawn? Why on your knees? Why, what, because women weren't allowed there? As simple as that, or what?
Women are not allowed to be there. It is strictly male only.
Okay. Wow.
And for a woman to be there meant she was also trespassing.
Well, you know,
and there's multiple security checkpoints. There should not have been able to be a way for her to get to where she got.
And that in and of itself is interesting. From what I hear about Hillary, well, boy, that can go a number of different ways. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Joe.
Mr. King, we are up against our final break. We got one segment left after this, folks. You're listening to Zachary King, former Satanist, now saved. And his story is very incredible, from magic at an early age to becoming part of a satanic covenant to being a part of abortions, ritual sacrificial abortions, to becoming saved. We're going to come back with our last segment with Zachary King right after these short messages. Stay with us.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Hagmann Report, HagmannReport.com, Hagmann and Hagmann.com for the show, HagmannReport.com for all the show information and news analysis and stuff you need to know. Our guest is Zachary King. Our thanks to Bill McIntosh, Ocasa Media, and just a tremendous guy, and John Robertson as well for setting up this interview, helping arrange this interview with Zachary King, a former Satanist, giving us the real deal about abortion, the things that, you know, every Christian really, I think, needs to understand what's going on. Before we get back to Mr. King, and we thank him for his time tonight. It's an amazing, it's just amazing to hear this. Just to reassure everyone out there, we have feeds, multiple feeds coming in from major cities. Just everyone relax. Everything's fine. There's some dust ups at the Deplorable in New York or in DC. In New York, there's a few minor skirmishes, but nothing. We're going to be keeping our eyes on this. And if anything does come up, we're going to be monitoring this actually between now and, Saturday morning. So we've got teams, and thanks for your support. Thanks to your support, we've got teams that are actually monitoring this in real time. So, and people who are on, you know, actually on the ground monitoring this in real time. But really, at this point, there's not too much to say. And the focus should be, as well as it should be, on Zachary King. Before we get back to him, TradingPostInTheWoods.com. TradingPostInTheWoods.com. Now you have the opportunity, folks, to have what your grandparents had at your fingertips. Knowledge to empower you, the skills to equip you, the supplies to sustain and assist you, and like-minded staff to encourage you. Where? At TradingPostInTheWoods.com. That's TradingPostInTheWoods.com. At TradingPostInTheWoods, they teach and equip people how not to be a victim or the problem when crisis happens, but instead be the solution. They are an American family-owned and operated company, formed from their skills and knowledge gained from responding to over 18 major and countless minor disasters, both in the U.S. and around the world. Folks, TradingPostInTheWoods.com is the place to shop for things that you need. I mean, look, most disaster victims don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone medicinals. They've created simple survivals, American Heritage Remedies Kit, and other natural alternatives to provide help for a host of issues when there is no doctor or pharmacy around. go to tradingpostinthewoods.com. That's tradingpostinthewoods.com. One more time, tradingpostinthewoods.com. Our guest is Zachary King. We're going to get back to Zach.
Yeah, let's pick up right where we left off, Mr. King.
Yes.
Okay, we were talking about the abortions and how many you performed. We were talking about the progression of your involvement in the Satanic Coven and some of the types of people you're around, some of the situations you found yourself in. Was there a moment in time that you decided you had to get away from this? What changed that led you out of the Satanic Coven?
Well, I had, like I said, I had totally done 146 assisted abortions. I had helped split about 120 Baptist churches. I was pretty much just in. I had done a lot of stuff. There's a lot of sinning that was a lot of fun at first, but you know, when you can sin all you want, then it kind of gets boring after a while. And I was tired of doing what I was doing, and I wanted to get out. I wanted to just quit. You know, like the first time you find out you're going to Bohemian Grove, because, you know, you've heard about that this place might be real, the first time you go, oh man, that's exciting. You know, getting to see the people that are really there, and you're actually there, and, you know, you've flown in, and you've ridden a limousine there, and there are, you know, presidents there, and this stuff is real. You know, you're getting to sit in on these private meetings and hear all this stuff. First time, very exciting. Second time, a little less exciting, but still exciting. Third and fourth and fifth time, this is still a big deal. Try 18 times. It's not fun anymore.
I got to ask this question. As an investigator, do you have any artifacts, any documents, any pictures, any trinkets, anything from your presence and your attendance at Bohemian Grove?
No. When I escaped out of Satanism, I didn't want anyone to know. I didn't want anyone to know that this had been my past. I was trying to hide. I knew that the ways to get out of a Satanic Coven was that I could commit suicide, I could be murdered, or I could die of natural causes. Well, since I sold my soul when I was 13, all three of those options sent me in hell. I didn't want to die, and I didn't want to go to hell. So, you know, if I'd have thought, oh, you know, I'm really going to need this picture of me standing with Barack Obama in 1994, I should hold on to this. You know, no,
is
I didn't
it,
think
is so. That figurative or is that literal? What you just said.
I didn't take a picture with him, but I saw him in 1994.
At Bohemian Grove?
At Bohemian Grove. I was told that man's going to be president one day. And I looked up and I saw him and I thought, you know, nobody in their right mind would vote for Jesse Jackson. Why would they vote for that guy? And then apparently a lot of people were not in their right state of mind and still voted for him twice.
Is in your estimation, I've got to ask this, and I hope you don't feel like you're on trial here or in an interrogation room. It's just my, I don't know. It's just the way I approach things. Is Barack Hussein Obama a satanic member of a satanic cult? Is he, to your knowledge, to the best of your knowledge, is he a member of a satanic cult? Is he engaged in pedophilia? To your best of your knowledge, in your opinion, allegedly?
Allegedly, the things that I would question about him would be, is he really Muslim? I still do wonder if he was born in America. And I would think that quite possibly a homosexual. But, you know, that's just things that I've heard. I don't know for a fact any of those things.
Okay. And yeah, that's fine. You know, we've had Larry Sinclair on. He's the man who reportedly engaged in some pretty despicable activities in the back of a limousine with Obama. But nonetheless, so there's that. Okay.
Well, I've heard that you couldn't have the other people on that he did those things to because they're dead.
Yeah. Well, three other members of his church.
Yeah.
All were killed violently within a very short window of time, all circling into him becoming the nominee and winning the election. Very suspicious, and everything that you mentioned were questions that we had before he even became president, that when you were to ask them, you would be labeled as, you know, a truther, being racist, to even bring up these topics. It was a...
Yeah, and I, pardon me, forgive me for interrupting. I just got to ask this, too. WikiLeaks email, Hillary Clinton sacrificing a chicken to Moloch in the backyard. Cheryl Mills or Hillary Clinton reference there. Is that a literal thing, or is that just... your thoughts on that?
Well, I've never been to the... there's the big satanic cult out in California is actually named the cult. And I would imagine that's probably the group that Hillary goes to. That group has... you could go there at any given time and see, like, super famous rock stars or rock bands there performing. You know, there's a lot of major stuff that goes on there, and there's no one bats an eye at doing stuff there. You know, just as, you know, so there's four meetings at Bohemian Grove every year. Most people know about one of them. Everybody knows about Cremation of Care, but there's three others. At the other three, no one thinks anything about whatever's going on. It's like, you know, you're not judged when you go there, you know, but if you weren't used to going there and you were like a member of the press that snuck in, like, you know, I don't know, Alex Jones, and you got away with some, you know, seeing some video footage, you know, or seeing some stuff, you'd be shocked. You know, I think that regardless of the truth of what Hillary Clinton has done, I mean, she could have literally sacrificed a chicken. I really kind of doubt that she would have sacrificed just a chicken. You know, if she's, I mean, and the scale of things you could sacrifice, a chicken really doesn't give you much of anything.
Interesting.
So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with it. Joe, I'm going to toss it to you.
Back to the Bohemian Grove, you mentioned the three other rituals aside from the cremation of care. Would you categorize those as... I guess if you were to find yourself at all these different rituals, are these worse than what they're, you know, the mock human sacrifice?
Are they mock human sacrifices?
The mock human sacrifice is they send a 7-year-old child behind a black curtain. When he goes back, they generally shock his genitalia. That's the scream you hear. And then they give him a shot of something that knocks him out, so he looks like he's dead. When he comes out the other side, it looks like there's a dead child. Even from a distance, it would look like a dead child. It is a sleeping child. When he wakes up, he's still alive, though. He's not taken anywhere and murdered. Generally, I believe the child is used in, like they've human trafficked him in there, or just, you know, like found him at a bus stop or something in America. So, I mean, there's nobody looking for this kid anywhere. Generally is, you know, what the thought process is. They don't do the ritual sacrifice, so to speak, that they do is sort of like, I don't know if either one of you bowl, but back in the day before electronic bowling was a thing, somebody bowling would tell you to build a wall, and that meant you'd build a fake wall. It wouldn't be Donald Trump. You build a fake wall on the bowling paper, and that meant that no bad luck would happen beyond that point. So your bowling game would improve. Well, that's sort of like what happens there. The cremation of care is supposed to be where you sacrifice a child, and this forgives all the bad luck, all the bad things, all the sinning you've done all year long, and now from here forward, you're just going to have good luck and you know, accomplish great and mighty things with whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. There's a lot of homosexuality that happens around this event. It goes on for about 2 weeks. So most people don't stay there the full 2 weeks. There's like different stages of what happens. As well, there's a high wizard there the entire 2 weeks. And he generally doesn't set up any magic to do at the event. He's setting up events for later so that, you know, now he's going to be flown to some state or some other country and he'll perform magic for the people there that are, you know, trying to hire him for things. The other three meetings, one happens around February, one's around May, and one's around October. They are a lot more private than the cremation of care, but you will still end up with a fairly large group. Like in the cremation of care, there is a large kitchen staff and wait staff that shows up. There's that same type thing at the other three events, but it's not open to, I mean, the cremation of care is not open to the public, but it's open to, like, you could find thousands of people there. And during the other three events, you would find hundreds of people there.
More and selective? Is that what you're saying?
More selective. It's more selective.
And how about the, shall we say, the fixins, if you know what I mean?
No sacrifice of any kind, not even a mock sacrifice.
Okay.
The things that they will do on occasion, because they have that giant owl statue, is that they will sacrifice small animals on this altar right there at the owl statue. They will sacrifice small animals on that altar, but nothing bigger than a small animal, and no mock sacrifice of a human being.
All right. And I've got to ask you this before I turn it back over to Joe. As we investigate Pizzagate, as we investigate the tens of thousands of emails, as we investigate the, well, you know, the story behind this. Tell us where to look. Tell us what to look for. Tell us where the fingerprints are. Tell us where the evidence is. Point us in the right direction.
There's a pizza restaurant. It'll probably burn down tonight. There's a pizza restaurant in Miami, Florida, that strongly resembles the pizza stuff, the restaurants that they were showing for the Washington, D.C. area. It doesn't have a basement, though, because in the Miami area, if you had a basement, there'd be water in it. You know, because I mean, it's right there, you know, the water's right there. But the way the building is done, the front half of the building is a restaurant that I don't think is ever open, yet cars go there frequently. And the back part of the building is set up for pornography, for porn shoots. Usually when a van shows up there, because it's enclosed in a big fence, like a 12-foot chain link fence with barbed wire on the top. If you're driving by this building, I don't think you would ever guess that what's happening in it is happening in it, but you would kind of wonder, why is there a 12-foot privacy fence, or, you know, chain link fence with barbed wire around a pizza place? There's vans that will show up that actually pull into the building itself, and they shoot pornography in the back of this restaurant. And then they load up all the kids in that van, and that's how they disappear.
Snuff films?
And it'd be child pornography. The last time I knew about snuff films, they were not done with children. They were done with adults.
Gotcha.
And again, that was the first two covens, well, the only two covens I was part of. Both of them, one of their names was Diablo Sex. And any group that embraces the name Diablo Sex is involved in child prostitution, child pornography, and human trafficking. And both of my covens were involved in
that. You know what you're describing?
In my first coven, I knew about it because I was in child pornography. In my second coven, I was over 18 when I joined. I mean, I got out of child pornography because I aged out. I grew a mustache. Nobody wants to see a mustache on a child. So they stopped using me in kiddie porn. When I become an adult, that wasn't one of my draws. I was not drawn to, oh, let me go have sex with children. That was not it. So I didn't care that, you know, my other coven did this kind of stuff, but it wasn't something that had an appeal to me. So it didn't affect me.
That's interesting. What you described with the restaurant or whatever in Miami that is closed off, there was something that came up related to the, I think it's the Pegasus Museum, but apparently that's just a name. The thing's not open, and there's lots of traffic coming and going, and people are, you know, left wondering why, and it has some strange connections. But that seems to be, I guess, if you were going to be smart about it, the one thing that bothered me is conducting things like that in an open business. But what you're talking about is much more, it's under the radar. It's not where families are coming and going who have no idea what's going on. The people obviously are coming and going there, know what they're coming there for. So, I mean, that's, it's pretty interesting that, what you just talked about with the privacy fences and, you know, the back doors and whatnot. And I guess, it's interesting to know that this stuff is going on in all these cities. There has to be an interconnected web of powerful people and people of influence who put these things together. Otherwise, it's much harder to do this, I would imagine, do that standing alone without that protection versus knowing you have local pastors, local law enforcement agencies, judges, and people who are involved in that, that know what's going on and know how to cover it up and push attention away. And it's mind-boggling to think that these people do still continue to get away with it, but with the organization that they have, that makes a lot more sense. We only got about 8 minutes left. Well, go ahead.
A lot of people don't realize the how far up the power structure things go, or, you know, how evil the tentacles of evil can reach. I mean, you know, my second satanic coven was worldwide. You know, being able to traffic somebody from anywhere in the world with enough money and with, you know, the right strings to pull or the right political people to know, and all of this stuff becomes very easy.
That's scary. Do you think the, you know, a lot of people say that psychopaths and evil people are drawn to power. In your experience, is it people are a certain way and they do are attracted to power and become those people of influence, or do people become elected and get you know, blackmailed or swayed into doing these kind of things?
I think that it can happen in a variety of different ways, but I think generally, you know, when, like, for example, you know, sometimes on occasion, Boy Scout leaders will molest kids. You know, I do not think that somebody became a Boy Scout leader and then saw a boy and thought, oh, he looks delicious, I'm going to go molest him. I think clearly that they were a pedophile first and thought, what job can I get that would put me close to children?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's the way that a lot of things work. I think that there's just evil people out there, and these people think about, what would I like to do with my evilness? Oh, I would like to, you know, do X, Y, and Z. What job would I get that would be best for that? You know, it would be like somebody that's a serial killer that really, really, really wants to kill somebody but doesn't want to go to prison for it, or, you know, be given the electric chair for it. So they join the military.
Yeah.
And you know, if you join the military, you might go out and kill a bunch of people.
Before the end of the program, I'm just going to ask you this, and I apologize for sounding redundant in my questions, but with respect to Pizzagate and the art, in quotation marks, of, what was her name?
Yeah, I know who you mean.
You know who I'm talking about. Is this typical in the circles of satanic circles? I mean, is this, when you, okay, obviously, I'm sure you, well, I'll ask you, did you see pretty much the art of that woman using the blood and bodily fluids?
Well, the thing that she does, you know, as you know, in the Bible, it says that, you know, Satan was a liar and the murderer from the beginning. So clearly Satanists are not going to tell the truth when they're describing something. Because she says, you know, well, if you do this ritual at home, then yes, it could be considered a satanic ritual. When you do it in an art studio, then it's art. Like, really, that's weird, because I'm Catholic and we go to Mass. I go to Mass every day. If I go to Mass at my house, it's a Mass. If I go to Mass at church, it's a Mass. If I go to Mass at a hospital, it's a Mass. If I do a black Mass as a Satanist, it doesn't matter where I do it, it's a black Mass. I did it in a museum, it's a black Mass. If I did it at a satanic church, it's a black Mass. So her ritual is satanic no matter where she does it. She's a liar. And she's just trying to deflect the truth and redirect us to a different direction than looking at her boss. And she does art? Really? She's an artist? And her art is taking a knife and stabbing herself in the hands? Kind of normal person does that.
It's pretty dark stuff. And it shows, I mean, there's, you know, people that are connected to the Clintons and to the Podesta and the seats of power. It shows a pattern of behavior, a very psychotic behavior, if I had to throw my own opinion in there. And it seems like these people are above the law, which is the way these things seem to work for some reason.
Fascinating.
Yeah. We only have a few minutes left, Mr. King. Anything that you want to make sure that you say that you haven't said yet, or take the last few minutes if you want to, and take us home.
Well, one of the questions I get that I started getting recently was, people saw photos of children with red shoes, and I noticed that wasn't a question you guys asked, and it has to do with the Pizzagate thing. The kids with the red shoes are the ones that were like chosen. They kind of won an award, and the award they won is that somebody that donates a lot of money to their particular event gets to participate with the child of their choice that happens to be wearing red shoes. It's kind of like a dubious honor. You know, anybody that wants to check me out further, allsaintsministry.org. I have probably about 45 videos that are just instructional. They're like 3 to 5 minutes long. I know that not many of us have long attention spans. There's probably some people that fell asleep during my interview. So, you know, if you go to my website, you can check those out. I have other interviews posted. I have people online that love me and people online that hate me. So if you decided, oh, I can't stand this guy, there, you've got friends online.
Welcome to the party.
And their videos as well. I am hated by a lot of Satanists. Something about me exposing their boss seems to upset them. And, you know, and as well, if you have questions, if you have spiritual warfare concerns, the devil's attacking you. He's the monkey on your back, and he won't get off, and you need some help. My email address and my phone number are on my website, and I will give you all the time you need. I will help you in any way that I can. That's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you.
Reassure me, reassure our audience, that Jesus Christ is, in fact, your Lord and Savior.
Absolutely. I was brought to Jesus in 2008, January of 2008. You know, the people that did not get to hear my salvation story, you got to look that up online. It's a dynamic story that we could do an entire show on that. It was the best day of my life. You know, realizing that I had not sold my soul when I was 13 years old, realizing that Jesus was my Lord and Savior, realizing that all my occult, my magic, my Satanism, all that was false. It was just one big tub of crap, you know, and just seeing that there was hope for me, that, you know, when you realize, as bad as I was, I can make it, anybody can make it. God can forgive anybody. You know, all of us stand a chance, you know, and some of us, that's all we need is that chance. Just knowing that Jesus loves me makes everything worthwhile.
What a fantastic message. And
very good.
Just to reiterate what you just last said, that doesn't matter how far down or how far gone you think you are, you can always be redeemed through Jesus. Thank you so much, Mr. King, for spending your time with us tonight and sharing all the interesting and terrifying things that you did share.
Yes.
My pleasure. Thank you.
May the God of heaven, may the God of the Bible protect you, and the blood of Jesus protect you and each one of you. Thank you, sir.
We'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you.
11 o'clock for inauguration coverage, and we also have our show tomorrow evening. Till then, stay safe, God bless, and have a good night.